Hi, I'm Sarah, and welcome to You Make Sense. I'm a somatic experiencing practitioner and expert on trauma resolution, attachment, parts work, and nervous system regulation. This podcast is a manual to understanding your human experience so that you can navigate the world with freedom, ease, empowerment, and create the life that you desire. Remember, you make sense. All parts, always. So in this episode, I'm going to talk about unhealthy aggression and healthy aggression and how we can begin bringing resolution to the things we experienced in the past that are living inside of our bodies and being experienced in our lives today. First thing that I want to get to is describing this term coined by Peter Levine called healthy aggression. So healthy aggression is our ability to feel both full aliveness in our lives. So things like joy, connection, pleasure, and life force energy being free to move through us. It's also our ability to defend ourselves when we're finding ourselves in danger. The thing about healthy aggression is it always matches the circumstance of what's arising. So here's an example of this. Let's say I went into a restaurant and I ordered steak for dinner and the waiter brought me fish. So they just got it wrong. Not really a big deal. But what I say to them is, hey, I actually ordered the steak. Do you mind taking this back and bringing me what I ordered? That is appropriate healthy aggression. So it's my ability to speak up for myself. It's my ability to set a boundary. It's my ability to get my needs met. And as you heard in my voice, it matches what's occurring. Now, what wouldn't match is if the waiter brought the wrong food and I found myself going into a state of rage and I was so angry and felt like they were wronging me and I was swearing at them and yelling at them that they brought my wrong food and it ruined my night, etc. As you can see there, it doesn't really match the circumstance. In a moment, we're going to talk about unhealthy aggression, but healthy aggression always matches. So for example, if I found myself being, attacked, my response is not going to be the same as I had it with the waiter, right? I'm not going to say, oh, hey, I'm sorry you brought me the wrong food, or hey, I'm sorry that you're attacking me right now. I know you're doing that because you have unresolved trauma that isn't being addressed and you're projecting it onto me. That wouldn't be the appropriate response, right? The appropriate response in that moment would be to defend myself, so to fight back. And this also goes for if someone I love or just even a stranger is experiencing a lack of safety, my appropriate healthy aggression would be to come in and to do something or say something. Another example of that, a lower level of healthy aggression could be, you know, I'm in line at the grocery store and there's three people in front of me and someone cuts in front of the person that's in front of me. An appropriate response might be for me to say, hey, the line actually starts back here. So I am speaking up or defending that person in that moment, but it matches the circumstance. That's what makes healthy aggression healthy, because it's matching what is occurring at any given moment. So as I said earlier, healthy aggression is fueled by life force energy, this energy that lives inside of us. And when we haven't experienced trauma, it's not blocked and it's readily available. So it can be used for self-protection, but it also can be used for full aliveness and enjoyment. Oftentimes, Peter Levine talks about this experience of seeing something in front of us that's beautiful and just wanting to hold it or to hug it or to eat something that is pleasurable for us. It's allowing full aliveness in our bodies. And when we are able to access this healthy aggression, it sets us up for being safe in the world, but also to enjoy the experience of our life in front of us. This experience of being in healthy aggression is natural, inherent, and biological. Our systems know how to do this. If you look at babies, for example, very early on, as soon as they develop their ability to self-regulate, by the way, when babies are born, they can't regulate their own nervous system. When the vagus nerve comes online and fully develops, they now can. And so as a result of that, they're going to use this life force energy or healthy aggression to begin setting boundaries. And that might be saying something like, hey, put me down. I don't want to be held anymore. More right now. That is them flexing this muscle of healthy aggression. It matches the circumstance of what's occurring. Now, if they feel like they're not being listened to or heard, that healthy aggression is going to rise a bit and they might find themselves being frustrated because they're not being understood. So it comes out in a bigger way, but it matches the circumstance of what's arising. If we look at nature, for example, animals in the wild, they are experiencing and expressing healthy aggression all of the time. So a cheetah, if it's full and it's already eaten, it's not just going to bully and attack the antelopes because it's not in need of a food source at that moment. It's only going to go after the antelope if it hasn't had a meal. And that's healthy, appropriate aggression. I am not being bad. I am not being maniacal. I am not being dangerous. I am accessing this really appropriate response. I've been lucky enough to spend some time in Africa. And at one moment, I was watching a pride of lions. They had just killed a zebra. And they were all, you know, eating this meal together. And there were these really small animals. There are two of them. They go in pairs. I can't remember the name of them, but they're really cute, smaller than a fox. And they're also very intelligent. And they were coming around and they were looking at that zebra and they were thinking, oh my gosh, we could really use some food right now. And they have this giant zebra. Maybe they'll give us some. And so the leader of that pride of lions, he looked up. He was, by the way, after they eat, they all get very lazy and they nap. We can tend to think of these apex predators as just so violent or aggressive. But the truth is, they spend very small amounts of their life being in this place of hunting. The rest of the time, they're napping, cuddling, licking each other, and being pretty docile. So anyway, this big lion that had just eaten, he looked up and he saw them. And what he was doing was he was expressing healthy aggression to them, but appropriate to what matched the circumstance. He was giving them the energy of, hey, listen, it's our food. You know it's our food. You got to go get your own food somewhere else. So just back off. But he didn't get up and kill them. He didn't scream or roar. He just gave them a look. These cute animals, they saw it and they said, oh my gosh, okay, we'll go away. And they went away for a second and then they came back. I watched them do this with this lion for maybe literally like a half hour. And the closer they got, the braver they got, the more the lion upped the healthy aggression. So it went from just sitting up with his head to actually standing. So he raised the healthy aggression by saying, listen, you're not listening to me. This is mine. It's not yours. Then when the animal got even closer and got a bite, he started to roar. Can you see the building of that healthy aggression? After he roared, they came back because they're very brave little tiny creatures. And at that point, he started to move towards them. His intention was not to kill them. His intention was not to harm them. His intention was to set a boundary. So you can see there, that's appropriate to what happened. And after he came towards them, they said, all right, he's not going to let us have this meal, so let's go do something else. And so I'm sharing that with you because a lot of us have an orientation towards healthy aggression as being unkind. Healthy aggression is not unkind. It is actually the kindest thing we can do for our younger parts of ourselves, but it's the kindest thing we can do for others because I am saying, I'm not going to acquiesce. I'm not going to okay what's not okay. I'm not going to enable you to do something that's not all right. And also this goes for protecting others when we are out in the world. Now, the reason that we have an association to healthy aggression being dangerous is because of unhealthy aggression. So before I go into explaining what unhealthy aggression is, I just want to say a few more things about healthy aggression. As I said, healthy aggression is our ability to defend ourselves and also our ability to access full aliveness. And as I just named with lions, right, in the wild, they're ebbing and flowing between those two things all of the time. That's what makes them safe in the world. And so when we are fully present to our own healthy aggression, it's what allows us to take risks in life. It's what allows us to be seen, to be known, to be heard, to take up space. Because we have this almost like, think of it like an internal superpower that I can turn on anytime that I need it. That's the self-protective part. That's what any apex predator has, that ability to turn it on. I will also say that's what prey animals have, like a deer in the wild. It has the ability to turn this on. Of course, that looks different than a cheetah. But if it senses danger, it's going to pause for a moment and see, is that actually dangerous? And then it's going to use its amazing ability to be agile to flee from whatever's happening. And it's accessing healthy aggression in that moment. So when we have healthy aggression inhibited, and in a moment we'll talk about why it becomes inhibited, but when that happens, we don't have access to this internal self-protective system. The result of that is our inherent biological ability to protect is not there, and that means we are less safe in the world. As a result, we're going to find ourselves living perhaps a smaller life than we feel called to. And that means not taking risks. And that means not using my voice. And that means not taking up space because my system is saying, it's not safe to do that. I don't have that inherent system available for me. It also means that life can feel a bit dull if I'm not connected to this life force energy. It might feel like a malaise or I'm going through the motions. Things don't feel vibrant. They don't feel a 10 out of 10 in terms of the aliveness that could be available for us. So it is imperative that we come back into this inherent biological experience that we all have the ability to have. And in a moment, we're going to talk about how we do that. Before we do, let's go back to this experience I named a moment ago of unhealthy aggression. And this is the reason why so many of us are afraid of our own healthy aggression and disconnected from it. If you find yourself struggling in your life, maybe it's in your relationships, feeling good in your body, stepping towards your purpose, or living the life you are here to live, I want you to know there are things that we can do to shift this. And all of these different areas of life actually have a commonality to them. The system responsible for so much of the stuckness we experience is called our autonomic nervous system. And I'm hosting a two-day live event called Unlocking the Life You Desire that is going to equip you with tangible tools to actually make the shifts you're desiring in all areas of your life. Each day of the two-part training series is an hour and a half long. There will be a teaching component to it, and then I'll be answering questions from you and the rest of our community that's there. Day one is all about expanding our capacity for more joy, aliveness, goodness, and abundance in our lives. On day two, we're going to focus on stepping into the purpose that's calling you in your life or expanding to the next iteration of what that looks like for you. And if you can't be there live, still RSVP because a replay will be available for you until September 8th. I can't wait to see you there. So unhealthy aggression is essentially repressed trauma that's being projected out onto others, the world, and onto ourselves. This is the result of having experiences in the past, traumatic experiences, where the appropriate response to say something, to fight back, or even to flee was inhibited. So our nervous system says, if you are actually to express this healthy aggression, there's going to be a secondary trauma that occurs that is far worse than even what's occurring right now. So it inhibits that response and instead has us fawn or shut down. And so that appropriate behavior of protection is inhibited in that moment. So if I was to say something back, love would be withheld far worse than it's already being withheld right now. If I was to fight back, I would be harmed worse than I'm being harmed right now. If I was to tell the teacher about me being bullied, it would have been far worse tomorrow when I'm at school or on the soccer field or in the locker room. So I'm going to inhibit it. This is a brilliant survival response. And I want you to know, if you did that along the way, that was the right thing to do. Your nervous system is making the right choice based on whatever it was that occurred. Now, the result of that is the energetic experience of that trauma has to go somewhere. And if it's not able to come out in self-protection and in the behavioral response of doing what we need to do to ensure our safety in that moment, then what happens is it becomes internalized. And the energetic signature of that trauma now lives in our bodies. So for many of us, we experienced trauma in the past where it wasn't safe to express the appropriate self-protective response in that moment. Meaning, it wasn't safe to say, hey, what you're doing to me isn't okay, or I have needs that are not being met right now, or to fight back if we're being attacked, or to defend ourselves in a particular way. Our nervous system is assessing the entire situation, and it may decide that in this moment, if you are to do any of those things, there is going to be a worse secondary consequence, meaning there will be additional trauma that is far worse than what you're enduring right now. So it makes a split second decision and it says we aren't going to do that. And instead, we are going to fawn or shut down, meaning I'm going to acquiesce or become what I think you want me to be in this moment to ensure my survival, which is the appropriate response. It's the best response that your nervous system could come up with. And we know it worked because it got you here. And in doing that, we internalize what happened. So instead of that natural inherent response being able to be externalized through the self-protective mechanism, it becomes internalized in our bodies. And remember, trauma is not simply an event or experience that happened to us. It's the overwhelm of stimulation in our bodies met in the face of helplessness. So that energetic signature or quality of that trauma has to go somewhere. And if it's not being projected out, that means that it is going internal and living inside of our bodies. And when this occurs, I internalize what happened. So instead of me saying, hey, that thing wasn't okay, the experience becomes, I'm not okay. I'm not lovable. I'm not good. I'm not worthy. I don't belong. I am dirty, bad, disgusting, and, you know, a plethora, of course, of other things, depending on what we experience at any given time. And then that internal experience, the somatic experience of that, becomes shame. And we go further into a collapse response. I often think of this as the ugly sweater analogy. And in fact, maybe 15 years ago, a dear therapist of mine gave that to me. So when we think about this ugly sweater, what that really means is when a trauma occurs to me, instead of me seeing it as separate from me, I overcouple it. And that means I over-associate myself with it. Instead of me seeing myself as separate from it, I am now that thing. So imagine it like when someone harms us, a trauma occurs, it's as if they are putting this ugly sweater on me. They're throwing that up onto me. And now I have this tattered old sweater that I'm wearing that I think is my skin. That's the overcoupling. And so in order for us to resolve that trauma, we have to take the sweater off. You cannot talk yourself into that. That is completely and wholly somatic work. And it requires accessing the healthy aggression that was appropriate to what occurred at that time. In a little bit, we're going to talk about a process on how we do that. But I just want you to understand the consequence of what happens when we internalize the appropriate response. And again, if you did that, it means it was the right response in that given moment. Now, another long-term effect of internalized healthy aggression is chronic illness. It's very common when we experience trauma, when we weren't safe to express what was appropriate, that energy living in our bodies creates illness in our bodies, autoimmune disease, because I'm not able to express the appropriate affect to what happened. So then I have experiences in my adult life. Something happens where I don't feel like I'm being properly heard or I'm wronged in a particular way, but I don't have the ability to express that. So my feelings of frustration or anger or being let down goes inside and becomes metabolized. The result of that is my system can start to attack itself and I develop illness, as I named. So we have to begin accessing this healthy aggression and building our capacity for it to not only resolve the past, but to be able to experience our present life from a place of safety, self-protection, and full aliveness in this life force energy. Before we get to how we do that, I want to talk about unhealthy aggression. And when you hear the word aggression, most people just generally think about this version of it, which is why so many of us have a fear of being in our healthy aggression, because we are associating it with this experience of unhealthy aggression. Unhealthy aggression is essentially repressed trauma that is being projected out onto others, the world, and ourselves. So this can look like snapping at people. By the way, I want to name that to a degree, we are all expressing some form of unhealthy aggression in our lives. For example, so if you're in a romantic partnership, this is where your childhood experiences come out the most. Why? Because a romantic partnership reminds your nervous system of those early life experiences more than any other relationship. So maybe I had a loving home, but my caregivers didn't know how to emotionally tune with me. So I have frustration around that. And so when I'm in a safe relational container in my adult life, my nervous system says, wow, we're safe now. And because we're safe, maybe we can try to get some of this unresolved trauma out. And it comes out with snapping at our partner, being short with them, being agitated with them. Not because we actually want to experience those things towards our partner, but our system is trying to gain resolution on the past. So I just want to normalize this for us. If you think about your closest relationships, there's probably some of the past being superimposed on it. And that would be a version, a mild version of unhealthy aggression. It doesn't match the circumstance of what's occurring because that response isn't actually about my partner. It's about my caregiver. Now, the unhealthy aggression that we might be more familiarized with or we might think of more are things like emotional abuse, physical abuse, violence, things like road rage. That's a great example of unhealthy aggression. It is not matching what is occurring. So let's say I had a caregiver in my childhood who was physically violent with me. If I don't resolve that in my adult life, that is going to come out in all kinds of areas, maybe in my work, with my romantic partner, with my kids, and I might notice that all of a sudden I'm having explosive anger and frustration come out and I'm yelling at them or reprimanding them in a bigger way than is actually appropriate to what is happening. And so these are all versions of unhealthy aggression. What's really important to understand, though, is that unhealthy aggression does not bring any resolution to the trauma of the past. That's because in order to resolve what occurred in the past, we have to go back into the state-dependent memory or the felt sense experience of what occurred to that part of us and then bring resolution there with the appropriate response to whatever happened. So me, snapping at people, causing physical or emotional violence to others, is not actually bringing resolution. And if we look at people who are chronically expressing unhealthy aggression, it just continues over and over and over and over again. And I really want to name, and I hope you can hear, there is a wild difference between this unhealthy aggression, which we don't want to be experiencing or to be, of course, on the receiving end of, and then healthy aggression, which always matches what happens. Now, for many of us that were on the receiving end of unhealthy aggression, our systems, as I named, are going to be very fearful of our own healthy aggression. We have overcoupled that, and we're just going to see all self-expression of protection as dangerous or bad or unkind or unlovable. So before I get into how to resolve unhealthy aggression and how to come into our healthy aggression, I just want to give some examples of what it looks like to have inhibited healthy aggression in our adult lives. One of the most prominent examples of this is being really easygoing. People might say this to you a lot. You're so easygoing. You're so agreeable. Everything is always fine for you. That's a clue or an indicator that I might not have access to this full breadth of my human experience because it is very human to also be frustrated. It's very human to be discontent with something, to be bothered, to be annoyed, to be let down. All of these are a part of the full breadth of human experience. There are no good or bad emotions. But when we have healthy aggression inhibited, our system is going to see all of those things as dangerous or bad or not safe to express. So we'll find ourselves readily experiencing those dynamics in our adult lives. We're also going to find ourselves very disconnected from our needs. Having needs and expressing them is a form of healthy aggression. We'll also notice that we struggle to set boundaries because boundaries require healthy aggression. We'll notice that we really struggle to express anger of any kind. And it's very common that we'll even feel bad for the people that harmed us. It's almost like a role reversal. So we see them as the victim instead of seeing ourselves as the victim. We're not able to actually be in that place of defending ourselves. And you'll also have the somatic experience of what it's like to have stored healthy aggression. Stored healthy aggression lives in a variety of places in our bodies, but the most predominant places are our jaw. This is where life force energy really resides in a very big way, or self-protection energy. So you may notice that because of this, you have TMJ, you have migraines, upper back pain, or back pain throughout the entirety of your spine. Also very common for it to live near and around our reproductive organs and our hips, although it can be in other areas of our bodies as well. So now I want to talk about how we come back into our experience of healthy aggression. And I want to name that this is also what helps to resolve unhealthy aggression for you or anyone in your life who may be experiencing that too. What is imperative is that we are able to complete the incomplete experience. So whatever wasn't able to be expressed in the past, your physiology, your nervous system, and your psyche, and your parts are saying, but I want to make it different now. And I see this so much showing up for people in their lives. For example, if someone's in a car accident, let's say the car came on their left side, it is very common that their body is still bracing in that car accident. So you'll literally notice in their postural stance that their head is tilted towards the right, like I'm bracing for impact. My system is trying to complete the incomplete experience. An example of what this would look like to complete it would be allowing my physiology to do what it wasn't able to do then, which is to take the steering wheel and move out of the way of that car. When that's able to happen, it gets imprinted as complete and no longer is my system bracing anymore. That's just one example of coming into that appropriate healthy aggression. So I want to get into the steps on how we begin to do this in our lives. And like everything else, we do this in a slow, titrated way. The slower we go, the faster we go. So the first is that we have to build our capacity to be in the experience of healthy aggression. Otherwise, our nervous systems are going to put us in a state of collapse or shutdown. So when people say, like, you know, just rage, get really loud, or go into one of those rage rooms that they have where you break things inside of it, or just journal with all the rage and emotion that wants to come out that wasn't able to. If I do too much of that at once and my nervous system doesn't have capacity for it, it's very common that we shut down. Why? Because my nervous system is saying, wait, if you actually do this, something worse is going to transpire or occur. So we have to begin slowly coming into this experience. I also want to name, I don't want you to have the expectation that I'm going to do it in front of someone else at first, meaning if I feel let down by a friend because they've canceled on me 4 times and I feel agitation about that, it's going to feel far too big to express that to them right away. Instead, on my own, I would want to feel into the sensations and feelings that are involved with whatever is arising. The more I do this in a slow, titrated way, the more my nervous system builds its capacity to hold that healthy aggression and also to see nothing bad happens when I do this. It's also very important that we show our parts that healthy aggression doesn't hurt people. So those younger parts of ourselves that either witnessed others being harmed through unhealthy aggression or were harmed through unhealthy aggression, we have to show them that this is not a bad thing to be in a state of self-protection for ourselves or for others, by the way. A way that I like to do this is by introducing nature. Just as I mentioned earlier in the episode, showing them how animals defend themselves, how two cats that are playing together, if one gets a little too aggressive, the other cat might hiss. And what they're essentially doing is they're saying, hey, that was too much. That's healthy aggression. And we are able to see, and our parts are able to see, oh, that doesn't make the cat bad. It makes them actually really good. A bird that's defending its eggs from a squirrel eating them is not a bad bird. It is doing actually what it should be doing to defend its young. And as I give those examples, what I would want is you to feel into with your parts how this is not a dangerous, evil, bad thing. This is actually really normal and healthy, and every animal in nature is doing it and has access to it. So as we begin accessing healthy aggression, we want to do it in a way, as I named, that's titrated. So we want to start small. Again, it's not something that you can talk yourself into. It's all happening in your body. So I would invite you to think of one experience in your life, whether it's present day or something from your past, where healthy aggression was inhibited. So my parents got divorced and they didn't talk to me about it. They didn't walk me through what was happening or my own experience. They seemed disinterested in that. Or love was conditional, or I was parentified. I had to take care of my other siblings or my parents. So what we'd want to do is access a small amount of the appropriate healthy aggression or response to that moment. And what can be really helpful is allowing yourself to feel it either in your hands or in your jaw. Simple example of this is squeezing your fists. So taking all of that anger, that activation, that energy, and putting it into your fists and let them clench. It's oftentimes what will happen is we'll start to shake as that energy is moving into this location in our body. And if we let it build and do its thing without trying to manipulate it, it will discharge. That means leave our body and begin to notice it dissipating. Another thing that you can do is take something like sticks or something that you can break that's not going to hurt you or someone else and put the energy in both of your hands and let the energy break the stick. Making sound is another way that we can do it, sending a sound deep into our viscera or our gut. So a sound that might sound very animalistic or animal-like, like a growl, moving our jaw and allowing our jaw to open and close as we make sound is another way to discharge this emotion. You can also do it via journaling. So that's a wonderful way to access healthy aggression too. But again, we want to do it in a titrated way. At any moment where you notice that it starts to feel like a lot, then we want to pause and stop. Just lastly, to name another thing you can do is to move something. Weightlifting, by the way, there's lots of research now on the benefit of using weightlifting as a way to resolve trauma. So can I put the healthy aggression into this movement or this exercise? Can be a really powerful way to discharge some of that old stored energy in our bodies. It's also really important that we do parts work with the younger parts of ourselves who had to inhibit that appropriate healthy aggression. Those are the versions of us that are afraid of us expressing the healthy aggression because for them it would have meant danger. So think about if you had a 7-year-old, for example, who was feeling angry about something that happened to them. My job as their parent would be to not be afraid of their anger and actually to celebrate the expression of it. So if they were being bullied at school, I wouldn't want to say to them, you know, they're bullying you because they like you. That is, it's really quite gaslighting, but I am minimizing their appropriate response that wasn't able to be expressed at school. With them at home, what I would want to say is, what do you notice in your body? And they might say, oh, I noticed that I want to squeeze something. I feel so mad. So what I would do is I would join in that. And I would say, yeah, that's really good. Let's squeeze this pillow. And is there anything you want to say or sound you want to make? My joining in that with them creates the safety that they need for their system to discharge it. That's something you can do therapeutically with a clinician or practitioner, but we can also do that with ourselves. And it's very important that we get our adult selves online to do that with the younger parts. Another thing that I want to say is that really good parents, your really good parents, if you had them, couldn't get it all right. And I work with a lot of people who have a lot of guilt around being angry. And if that's you, I just want to say this. The healthy aggression that wasn't able to be expressed is coming out in ways that you probably don't like and is also causing your parents some residual pain. What I mean by that is if we haven't expressed this, done this work, then I might find myself being really agitated with my parent. I'm just always frustrated with them. Feels like they can't get anything right and it always ends in some arguments. And then I feel guilty about that. So when you're able to actually look at, here are all the wonderful things that they did for me, and here's the things that they didn't do, not because they didn't want to, but because they didn't know how, because nobody taught them how to parent. And if both of those things can exist, then I can address the healthy aggression that I have. And the more that I'm able to work through that, process it through my body, those experiences get marked as complete. The result of that is I no longer get agitated with them. I no longer get frustrated because I've actually brought resolution to that which has not yet been resolved. And you never have to do that with them, by the way. This is all work that can be done therapeutically without ever having to process it in person with them. So it's also really important to name that in the processing of healthy aggression, so coming back into that self-protective response, we have to be in state-dependent memory. That means essentially I have to be re-feeling and experiencing what that part felt at that moment of impact or that moment that they weren't protected, which is why we have to build our capacity to do this work and build our capacity to get to what Peter Levine calls the eye of the needle or that moment of highest injury. When I have built my capacity for that, it's essentially like I'm traveling back in time. And instead of that part being helpless and undefended, that part now has me, my adult self, my protector. And I am able in a therapeutic container to complete the incomplete experience. The result of that is my system actually marks it as over. For myself, I experienced lots of abuse in my childhood. Sexual abuse, and lots of lacking of safety. So when I did my eye of the needle work, my body, my organism, its response was to match the circumstance of what was occurring. Remember, healthy aggression always matches what's transpiring. So for me, that meant defending myself in a really big way. And I remember noticing my system, it felt like it was trying to strangle somebody. Of course, I did not do that, and I wouldn't do that to anybody in real time, in real life. But it was my system saying, here's what I wish I could have done to make what was happening stop. And so I just want to share that if anyone has experienced abuse similar to mine, that the appropriate response is going to be much bigger than a response of not having a caregiver who could emotionally attune, right? And I'm sharing that because I don't want you to be surprised as we come into healthy aggression. It always matches the circumstance of what transpired. When I was able to do that work, it completely remediated my shame. I no longer felt like I was bad, like I had done something bad. And because it was marked as complete and that shame was able to lift, I was also able to come into healthy aggression in a way that allowed me to navigate my adult life from that place. I was no longer fawning. I was no longer acquiescing. I was no longer at the restaurant taking the wrong food and saying, I'll just eat it anyway. I was able to actually be my own defender. And this is something that we all can come into and our systems want us to come into. Remember, everything in nature has a natural ability to be in this ebb and flow of protection. And then also, of course, softness when I don't need to protect. It's like our superpower. And it's this work that allows us to get there.
Enjoying what you've heard so far and want to go deeper into somatic healing? I have a free workbook called How to Gain Control Over How You Feel, and it will help you to get in the driver's seat of your experience and step towards your desires with more ease. Check the show notes below for a link to download.
All right, let's get to the Q&A portion of this episode. We have Rachel back here with us today. If you're new to the podcast, Rachel is a member of my team. She's a trained social worker. She runs every community that we have inside of our programs, and she's such an important part of this podcast. So hey, Rach, it's good to see you today. Thank you for being here.
Oh, it's really lovely to be here. Yeah, it's a real honor. And just before we start, I just want to say thank you to everyone who emails in and shares how impactful the podcast is. Like, I read a lot of those emails, and we have someone else called Courtney on the team. And it is just so heartwarming to hear what an impact people are getting from tuning in and listening and implementing what you share. So I just want to like thank everyone for listening and being with us. And thank you, Sarah, for like creating the podcast and sharing this wisdom with everyone.
Thanks, Rachel. And thank you for being a part of it with me. And for everyone listening, we want you to know that we want this to be an interactive experience. So if you have aha moments from the episodes or even questions that arise, you can reach out to us. We'll link the email in the show notes for you to reach out. And also, by the way, again, if you're new to the podcast, every podcast ends with a Q&A. The reason that we do this is because we want to help support this work integrate into your life specific to you. And so what we found is, and certainly I found in my life,
is that other people's questions usually resonate with us in some way. So if you have any questions about your own healing journey, about navigating life, stepping into the life that you desire, we really invite you to reach out and submit them. We go through all of the questions, hundreds of them that come in, and compile them. And by the way, sometimes questions inspire full episodes. So we'll link in the show notes how to do that. You can submit written questions or audio or video. So anyway, let's get to the four that we have today. I think there's four around healthy aggression.
Oh, I hear this in the community from a lot of people. So what does it mean when I feel anger and it's directed towards myself? So self-hatred, self-criticism, frustration with self. What should I do?
So this is an indicator of one of two things. Either at some point in our life, the appropriate healthy aggression to whatever was arising was inhibited, meaning, as we talked about in this episode, it wasn't safe or I didn't have the conditions that were necessary for me to be in that sympathetic response, to fight back, to say something, etc. And that energy that's involved in any traumatic experience, it has to go somewhere. So if it's not going out, it will go inside and become internalized. Now, humans are meaning-making creatures. We have to make meaning of everything. And it's very common that when we experience trauma, specifically in childhood, but of course this can happen later, that we make meaning that it was our fault or we did something wrong. That's part of the internalization. It's actually a really adaptive strategy for children in particular, especially if the trauma is happening in your home, because a child needs to create, if it's not actually there, some semblance of safety. So if a child was to say, wow, my parent is really bad, or my parent is a child themselves because they're identified with their young parts, their system would have to be with the real serious lack of safety. But if I say, it must have happened because I did something wrong, I'm the bad one, then it actually creates a higher level of perceived safety for the child, meaning my parent isn't as dangerous as they actually are. So anyway, all of that creates this internalization and self-hatred. Instead of me, and by the way, this is the way shame is created, the internalization of what happened. And I often talk about this experience of having a sweater on us, a tattered old sweater. And that is the trauma that has been projected onto us. Instead of seeing that our skin is underneath, we think we are that tattered sweater or what happened to us. So instead of that was bad, I'm bad. Instead of that was dirty or disgusting that was done to me, I'm dirty and disgusting. I'm unlovable. I'm unworthy. So that's one of the reasons. The second reason is because we tend to replicate what was done to us. So we often develop a self-protective part that mimics our childhood caregivers or whomever was most predominant in our lives. So if I had a caregiver that was hypercritical, I'll often develop a self-protective part that has the same voice of that parent. And I start to say the same things to myself that were said to me. Both of those examples are that experience of healthy aggression being inhibited. And so the more that we do this work, the more that self-hatred and that hypercritical part resolve.
Oh, okay. And so when someone's feeling that self-hatred and self-criticism and it's intense, what should they do?
That's such a good question. I'm sure we get a lot of those inside of the community. I'm not in the communities that Rachel runs. We have lots of questions that pop in there. So I'm sure a lot of people have had questions about this. This is where parts work is imperative. Really, really important. We have lots of episodes on this podcast around parts work. I really invite you to go listen. What we have to do is we have to come to the aid of that part that is experiencing that internalization or that self-hatred. And so the way that we do this is we have to differentiate from that part of ourselves, meaning we have to come into our true self, adult self, highest self, or self in terms of IFS work. And so again, we have episodes on how to do that, but anchoring in your most true adult self. And you can think of one moment in your life where you've experienced that before, where I felt safe, steady, present, in awe, powerful, all good, connected, whole. Let yourself marinate in that so you can feel it fully in your body with all senses. And then noticing what it's like to be an adult you. Then what I would do is invite in that part that experiences that self-hatred. And I just want you to notice how they somatically feel very different in your body. They're two very different versions of you. Next step is using an as-if tool. So I would imagine, what if I was with a 10-year-old, a 16-year-old, a 20-year-old, a 5-year-old, however old that part is, who was saying these things to themselves? So not my little part, but another person. And what you would likely be able to see from adult you is that they're wonderful and whole and worthy of love and good, and they're not bad and not deserving, certainly, of those words being said to them by themselves or by others. That begins to create an experience of empathy and compassion. Then what we want to do is take that energy, turn towards our young self, and meet our young self in that way, feeling that for them fully. And when we do that, it begins to show that part who they really are. We're holding up a mirror for who they actually are. And the more that we love them fully, they will start to actually believe it for themselves over time. And when this occurs, this is part of the reparenting process, those parts of us get the resolution that they're looking for.
And so for the part that's super critical, do you work with that part in the same way?
Yeah. So a hypercritical part, and again, everybody, if you're like, what in the heck are you talking about? Parts work. Again, I don't know. We probably have a handful of episodes that are specifically focused on this. So hours of support for you around that. A hypercritical part is a protective part. By the way, when I say protective parts include things like self-sabotaging parts, avoidant parts, parts that push people away, perfectionist parts. And a lot of times people will say to me, like, how is that protecting me? They're actually causing me problems, like a hypercritical part. Those are just the residual effects of their protection. So the hypercritical part is protecting this very vulnerable part that experienced some kind of trauma along the way or overwhelm along the way. So what they're essentially doing is quite similar to a perfectionist part. They're sort of picking us apart as a way to try to assemble the most idyllic version of us, because if I am just good enough, maybe I'll receive love. If I am just good enough, maybe something bad won't happen to me again. And the other reason why this transpires is because, again, it's learned behavior from another parent. So this protective part is saying, well, this is the way that you parent a part. The protector's job is to parent that part. So everything that our system is doing is for good reason. And the more that we are able to express that healthy aggression, which we talked about in this episode, and reparent the parts, the more that this changes. I had very hypercritical parts of myself. I internalized all the trauma that was done to me. And by the way, I could feel no appropriate healthy aggression towards my stepfather who abused me, towards my brother who abused me, towards my mother who didn't protect me and neglected me. I actually felt bad for them. This is really common that this happens when we've internalized. And there was no amount of talking about this that changed that. I was like, well, you know why they did it, meaning like their own trauma, or, you know, they're occasionally nice to me, or, you know, lots of things that I would do. And then I would be so incredibly unkind to myself. And that's because my system was saying, if I was actually able to express that appropriate healthy aggression towards my stepfather, my parts are saying, you might have died. Something really bad could have happened to you, worse than the abuse. And so became inhibited. And so that is really normal and common. And I'll say lastly on this question, even for people who had really loving parents, no parent got it exactly right. And it's very common that we inhibit the appropriate healthy aggression that we had towards our really loving parents because we felt bad because look at all the good things they did for me. So let's say I had a parent whom showed up to all the things, you know, they made me dinner every day, they took care of me physically, but they never asked me how I felt. And it would be appropriate to have anger about that. I was chronically misattuned with. But what happens is we say, oh, well, my poor mom, she was doing so many great things. And then I internalize the appropriate response. The result is it comes out in different places, like agitation, frustration. And then I feel shame and guilt that I'm being angry at my parent. So I just want to name that the more that we process this, that actually the more that you can love your parents really well, because that thing that's been waiting to be resolved is finally resolved.
Well, thank you for going into such depth and detail around that. I know it's really confusing to wonder and work out, like, how is a really critical part protecting? So, yeah, thank you so much for, just helping make that much clearer. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so for our next question. Hi, Sarah. I wanted to know if you have any advice on how to move through anger and resentment somatically when I know it's from a child part. When I'm triggered, I try to separate what is from the current situation and what is from past wounds. Logically, I know I should move on, but I feel hurt inside, and it's hard to not act passive-aggressive to people. When I know the intensity is my stuff, but I'm also hurt in real time. Any insight would be so helpful. I love your work and your authenticity. You are a gift.
As are you, whoever submitted this question. And it's such a good one. So we have lots of episodes on the nervous system. Please go listen to them. It's intertwined, honestly, in every single episode that we do, but we've got lots of episodes on it. So just real basic here. We have a threat detector called neuroception in our brainstem. It looks out into the world every millisecond to see if we're safe or not. It's been doing that our whole lives. The way that it decides if you're safe or not is by looking to an internal database or computer system that's inside of us. It doesn't need identical matches to decide. It needs flavorings or similarities in order to decide. So I'm going to give an example here of romantic relationships. Romantic relationships are where our younger parts show up the most. Why is that? Because a romantic relationship emulates what it was like to be in our family of origin. Now, your partner might be entirely different than your caregivers, but it has flavorings or qualities of the same thing. They are your home. They are your base. They are your most important person. They're where you go to for love, intimacy, connection, and so on and so forth. So to your threat detector, it's saying, well, if you're my person, you must in some way be like those experiences in childhood. And so this is why we become what is often referred to as hypersensitive inside of our romantic relationships, or we feel really overwhelmed inside of them, or frustrated or angry or shut down, out of control, because our young parts are showing up, because the past is being superimposed onto the present. What is vital is that we are able to tease apart what is actually about today and what's about the past. Most people have no idea that the past is being superimposed on the present, and we think whatever we are feeling at any given moment has to do with whatever's in front of us. Whether that's whatever's in front of us has something to do with our romantic partner, or what's happening in work, or what's happening with our kids. And more often than not, it's a combination of both. It has somewhat to do with the present, but it has a lot to do with the past. So what we have to do is we have to begin asking ourselves this really simple prompt. Did my reaction match the circumstance? So here's an example. Let's say that I've asked my partner 10 separate times, hey, can you please help me in the morning and feed the dog? Because I get really, my mornings are so busy. My partner says, yeah, sure, I'll do that. And then he forgets to do it 3 times in a row. And I have to remind him, hey, you forgot to feed the dog. Can you feed the dog again? And then he says, oh, sorry, I forgot. In the first moment, I get a little healthy aggression, like activated, annoyed, irritated, but it begins to grow. So by the third time, my response is pretty intense. I feel a lot of anger overwhelming, like a volcano in my body. And then I immediately have thoughts like, you don't care about me. You take advantage of me. It's all about you. It's never about me. I have to do everything on my own. And I snap at him. Okay. So if you ask yourself in the moment, did my reaction match the circumstance? Guess what's going to happen? You're going to say, yes, it does match the circumstance. Why is that? Because in that moment, my threat detector is not seeing my loving, caring, amazing, thoughtful partner. My imperfect partner, because I'm imperfect too, we're all imperfect, who just forgot or is trying to create a new neural pathway for feeding the dog, and instead superimposes my childhood neglect onto him. So, you know, 18 years of being severely, severely neglected was my experience. So when he didn't do that, the threat detector said, oh, wow, he must be like that home. He must be like your mom. As a child, it was not safe at all for me to express any healthy aggression ever. So all of that became inhibited. So when my threat detector sees him do that, all of the sudden what happens is a little girl shows up in my body. Maybe she's 5, 10, 16, whatever, who couldn't express that healthy aggression. Now, when you're in a safe relationship or a safe environment, your nervous system knows you can express it now because he's safe. So all of a sudden, that 6-year-old is saying what she couldn't say to my mother. You don't care about me. This isn't okay. I hate you. I never want to see you again. Whatever, you know, that part might be feeling. And if I ask myself in that moment, does the reaction match the circumstance? I am not in 2025, which I was going to say 2024. We're actually in 2025. Crazy. Halfway through the year. I'm in, 1987. So what's really important is later when I'm in regulation, in my adult self, I'm actually in 2025. I want to look at the situation and say, did that reaction match? And the answer is no, it didn't. Now, what I want to do is ask myself in that moment, when was the first time I remember feeling that or experiencing that? Or what did it remind me of? So let's say I said, it reminded me of being a kid and having to teach myself to read, or going to school and feeling so embarrassed that I was the only kid that didn't have a parent at the recital or whatever. So I connect to that young part from adult me. And again, go listen to some episodes on parts work, like I already talked about in the last question. And then the truth is, every experience you ever have is the truth to a part of you. We do not want to gaslight ourselves out of this by saying, like, I shouldn't have been mad. No, that six-year-old should have been that angry. That was appropriate for her. So what I would do is exactly what I would do if I had a six-year-old who experienced that. I would not shame them out of their experience. I would not be afraid of their experience. I would join them in it and validate it. So it's beyond just the words of validation. I would feel it with them, and that with that six-year-old, I might say, ooh, it makes sense that you feel that anger. Can we put it in your hands? Meaning, like, take all the anger and squeeze your hands as hard as you possibly can. This is literally somatic therapy. And I would squeeze my hands with them, join them in it, and I would celebrate this experience. And I would say, ooh, can you feel that getting shaky? And they might say, yeah. And I'd say, don't be afraid. It's okay to be shaky. And then I would say, do you think it wants to make a sound? And maybe they say, yeah, maybe something like, rrr, and I would join them in that sound. I know this might seem silly if somatic work is new to you, but this is what it's like to discharge somatic energy from our bodies. This is one way. And we would wait until it released. And then that child would notice, oh, my hands want to let go. And I took a deeper breath and I feel free from that energy. That means you titrated and discharged it out. I want you to do the exact same thing with that younger part. Then after we do that, we turn towards our adult self. And I ask my adult self, okay, how much of that experience was actually about adult me? And maybe it's like, 10% was about adult me. It really bothers me that it took four times, for my partner to do the thing that I asked him to do. By the way, this is a made-up thing. So my partner listens to this and he's like, you didn't ever ask me to feed Truman. That never happened. Anyway, so I might say to myself, yeah, that bothered me. And I might go to my partner and say, hey, when I ask you to do something, just know that it's scary for me to do it because of all that neglect. And so it would really mean a lot to me if you could take it seriously. And I'll even write it down for you. Like, what can set you up for success to be able to help me in this way? And what I'm doing there is advocating for my adult self. I'm naming what didn't work for me. I'm also advocating for the young part. And now we just repaired a rupture and supported the young part to have their experience. Both are important. If you try to just say love and light, people do that all the time, especially it's like often talked about as toxic spirituality or spiritual bypass. That's what that is. It is not appropriate for any animal to never experience healthy aggression. It's like if the hyena's pup is getting eaten by a lion. It's like, it's okay. I know you're hungry. Like, God loves you and God loves me. Have my baby. It's fine. That would not be very adaptive. The adaptive thing to do would be to fight back to the death to save their child. And that kind of healthy aggression is what we need for ourselves too.
Yeah. And how great to tend to the young part in us and also acknowledge, like, what did hurt in real time and how can I work with the person to, make that just better for ourselves. Yeah, that's really great, because sometimes we can get stuck in doing one thing or the other thing. And actually, both is, very powerful.
So important.
Yeah. And so this question is around parenting and anger and aggression that can arise through that. So I am a mum of 4 and 5-year-old girls, and I've noticed recently how often I'm getting irritated with them to the point where I become angry and even enraged. It feels very out of control, and I'm guessing something about their behaviour is triggering old trauma in my body, but I don't have specific memories coming up. So how do I figure out what exactly is activating me? And then what do I do to course correct?
Something that is not talked about enough in parenting, by the way, there's a lot that's not talked about enough. Number one, that your kids' nervous systems rely on your nervous system more than anything to regulate theirs. The best gift you can give your children is a regulated nervous system. It is primary and so important. So that's number one. Another thing that's not talked about enough is when your children reach the numerical age you were at when you experienced specific traumas, it is going to trigger the young parts of you if they don't have a resolution yet around what happened to them. And those parts are going to come to the surface. That is such an important principle that most people have no idea is going to happen, or when it does happen, they don't understand what is occurring or what's going on. So again, if the parts don't have resolution, this is what happens. So let's say that, I don't know, your kids, or did this person say 4 and 5? Is that how old they said? Yeah.
Yeah.
You have a 4 and 5 year old, and your 4 and 5 year old are, because you created safety in your house, they're being regular old 4 and 5 year olds. Like the 5 year old says, I think that white wall needs a rainbow on it. And they grab their crayons and they make a rainbow on the wall. And they're just so impressed with themselves that they made this great rainbow. They're like, why would you ever have a white wall? You could have a sparkle rainbow. Hello. And they bring you into the room and say like, look at the wall, right? And because they have safety, they're not inhibited because of you, and they are free to be messy. And this is how we learn things. Oh, you don't draw on a wall. Maybe we should all draw on walls. Maybe kids have it figured out. White walls are kind of boring. But anyway, you come into the room, and adult you knows, oh, this is what it's like to be a kid. And my job is to say, oh, we don't do that. And the rainbow's really nice, but we're going to draw rainbows on paper. But what happens is your 5 year old gets triggered. And your 5 year old sees that as dangerous and says, because in your home, it was like a dictatorship and you were on eggshells and you couldn't get anything wrong. If you got something wrong, you were ashamed. Why did you do that? What's wrong with you? Stop it. Or you were harmed or hurt in a specific way. So your 5 year old says, wow, that's really dangerous. Why did you just do that? And for some of you, that might look like you get really panicky and scared. Your 5 year old shows up. For others of you, your 5 year old might get really angry at your internal child, might get really angry at your biological 5 year old. And even sometimes jealous of them, which makes sense, right? My internal 5 year old might say, that's not fair. You get to just draw on the wall. When I got to drew on the wall, I was punished in my room and I couldn't have dinner and love was withheld. And it makes me angry at you. Or that 5 year old projects their own parent onto our child and becomes like the dictator. And so for all of those reasons are happening because our younger part is getting activated. I work with a lot of parents who, when their child got angry, it triggered for their young parts being terrified because their parent got really angry. So people will say to me, like, I don't know why I'm scared of my 7 year old. Like, I actually get scared of my 7 year old when they get really angry. And then my 7 year old gets more angry. Why? Because they can sense that your child part is present. And then there is no adult in the room. And this is just such an extraordinary common experience. And it really takes us reparenting our parts so that adult us can show up more so those young parts don't get triggered. Did you notice along your way, Rach, as a parent, just having any young parts show up for you? Meaning as you were on your journey?
A lot, all the time. And I had no idea that they were even there. And I had no idea that that would arise. I had a really lovely pregnancy. I was so excited to become a mum. And then as soon as I became a mum, literally all my parts came up, ping, 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 ping. I experienced so much rage, so much irritability, so many emotions and strong emotions that I just didn't even know were in me. Like, I had done a lot of work before I became a parent. You know, I'd had quite angry child teenage years where the healthy aggression did come out, not overly in healthy ways, but I'd done a lot of work by the time I had children. So I thought, oh, I'm going to be good. This is going to be great. And it was such a surprise to me when, yeah, my kids were small and all my buttons were pushed. And, you know, some of the examples that you shared were my experience. And so it was such a shock and really hard. And I so wish I had heard what you just said, like 20 years ago and to have known this stuff then, because Yeah, it's intense. Like parenting young children is really intense and really hard, and even more so when you've got your younger parts coming up. And, you know, but in my experience, like my parents, their parts show up, like when we have family gatherings, and I parent my kids so differently to how I was parented. So it becomes like a big parts party. And yeah, so there's a lot in there. So yeah, thank goodness you're sharing this.
And thank goodness you shared that. I think it so helps to remediate shame when we can see we're not the only one. Because what a lot of parents do is they internalize it. It comes out and then they say, oh my gosh, I'm such a bad parent. I'm so awful. And then they feel shame, but they don't know how to change it. So thanks for sharing that, Rach. So let's get to the last question that we have.
I have chronic pain and strong jaw tension after damage from a wisdom tooth extraction. And I heard that Peter Levine said jaw tension and pain might be a clue we need to bite in anger. So I've been practicing biting a towel, and it really awakens deep rage and then a release like yawning. It's tolerable. I've had many years of trauma therapy. I feel like it's improving my condition a bit, but not fully. So wondering if I'm doing it right. Could you speak about this exercise and or similar practices? Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So remember, for everyone listening, we're animals. And I use animals in the wild as teachers for us, and nature in general as teachers. And although we've evolved so much, we have self-driving cars and all kinds of things now, we have our evolution of our species happens very, very slow. And so if you look at like two dogs, and who love each other, and they also don't have to love each other, but let's say they do, and there's a toy in front of them, and one of the dogs is playing with the toy, and the other dog, just like children, is like, even though there's 45 toys here, I want that toy. I want that toy because you want that toy. And so the other dog goes over to try to get it. Now, what the dog that already has the toy, what they're going to do, likely, is they're going to say in their own language, you better back away because I have this toy right now. I love you, but if you get this toy, if you try to take this toy, I'm going to defend myself, so back off. And they do that by showing healthy aggression through their jaw. And they might show their teeth or growl like lightly under their breath, which is saying, hey, back off. And why do they do that? Because this is a place where healthy aggression is stored. Our jaw is one of the most powerful parts of our bodies. We used to be, you know, when we were living in caves and hunting and gathering, we used our jaws a lot more to eat. And so when you look at animals in the wild, what are they doing? They're using their jaw in a big way to eat, but also to communicate information. So to get our food, to kill something, we need that healthy aggression. To communicate, to set boundaries, all of that is happening within our jaw. So it is very common that when we have stored healthy aggression, when it was not safe to have that appropriate response and say, hey, back off. Don't talk to me that way. Get away from me. Or stop bullying me in school, whatever. That all that energy becomes locked and stored in this region of our bodies. And it can radiate. So it can radiate into having migraines, upper and mid low back issues, tension in our shoulders, and of course, pain in our mouth and our face as well. Very, very common. So what we have to do is we have to begin titrating the discharging of this energy. What that essentially means is if you haven't experienced a lot of healthy aggression and then you go to try to feel it, it will feel way too overwhelming to feel all of it at once because it's new to our bodies. And then we go into what's called our dorsal vagal complex or collapse. I would do this when I was early on in my therapeutic journey, I was told like, you know, go throw plates on the ground or into a rage room or just scream. But it was too much energetic charge for my system. And then I would notice that it would just either stop or I would shut down. So what we have to do is feel into small amounts of it. This example is really great of, can I squeeze like a bite on something, like squeeze or bite on a towel, let's say. You can also use sound and let yourself come into your animal body, imagining if I was that dog defending myself, how might I show healthy aggression on my face? And in this work, it literally is showing our teeth and opening our jaw and making sound, but opening our jaw really gently. Like imagine you're stretching a rubber band. If you're listening, it might sound something like this. If you're watching, watch my face too. Something like this. And if you can't see my face, there's almost like a snarl that comes onto my face. I look very animal-like. And in order to begin processing out this healthy aggression, we really need to come into that. You can't talk your way out of it. You have to feel your way out of it. One of those ways is resourcing our jaw. The person who asked this question is doing it exactly right, but you're titrating. So don't expect it's just going to all be gone. We do 5% and then we do another 5. So when we do this work, it helps to resolve not only that old healthy aggression, but also symptoms we might experience in our bodies.
Yeah. And it really helped me. So I used to get really bad neuralgia. So a pain right from like this side of my face and all in here, all in my jaws. I used to get really bad sinusitis. And through doing the healthy aggression tool, it went away. Like doctors didn't know what to do with me. They were telling me to have teeth out. I knew it wasn't my teeth. And so by doing this healthy aggression tool, I don't get that pain anymore. And I also, if I sometimes get a little twinge of it, I know, I've got some stored. There's some things I haven't been saying. And then I explore that. I use the tool and then, yeah, I don't feel that pain anymore. So it's like miracle.
I mean, that's amazing, Rachel. Thank you for sharing that with people, because so many symptoms that we have are psychosomatic symptoms. They are almost like the phantom symptom of unresolved trauma. The energy, just remember this, everyone listening, if healthy aggression is inhibited, the energy has to go somewhere in your body. And they usually set up camp in particular locations in people's bodies. Some people notice they have like, maybe they have really intense issues with their reproductive organs, or they have fertility issues, or they have heart palpitations, or they have migraines, like you said, or pain that's in their head or in their arms. And when we actually are able to do this work, it begins to lift. Why? Because you're taking the energy and getting it out of your body. It's really powerful work. And when we do this, we can set ourselves free.
Yeah, it's great.
So thanks for being here with us today, Rachel. I'm so grateful for you and all the ways that you share how this work has impacted you too.
Oh, thank you so much.
Enjoying this episode and want to go even deeper into somatic healing? You can join my email community for weekly teachings, tools, and live events. Click the show notes to join.